Hello and welcome to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast, part of the center's efforts to cultivate dialogue about university teaching and learning among faculty, students, and staff here at Vanderbilt and elsewhere. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, an assistant director here at the Center for Teaching. In this episode, we are changing up our format a little bit. Instead of featuring an interview with a single faculty member, as we've done in episodes past, this episode features audio recorded during a February 2008 lunch discussion co-sponsored by the Center for Teaching and the Vanderbilt Center for Ethics. The discussion was part of our joint Technology, Values, and Teaching series and was titled Teaching in a Digital Age: How Should Technologies Shape Our Learning Space and Pedagogical Practices? In just a minute, you'll hear the opening remarks made by the three panelists at that discussion. Patricia Armstrong, Assistant Director at the Center for Teaching and Senior Lecturer in the Department of French and Italian. Second will be Matt Hall, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Information Technology Services. And the third speaker is Jay Clayton, William R. Keenan Jr. Professor and Chair in the Department of English. All three panelists spoke about their experiences integrating technology into their teaching. Patricia, in the context of the French language and literature courses she teaches, and Matt and Jay in the context of a rather unique first-year writing seminar they co-taught in the fall of 2007. The seminar was titled Worlds of Wordcraft, and it examined the role of narrative in computer games and other new media. Another way we're changing up the format slightly here is that most of our other podcasts have been under 20 minutes, and we've tried to keep them fairly short. And to the point, this episode runs a little bit longer. We do have three speakers, which adds to that length, but we think it's really worth it. The ideas shared by all three speakers are quite interesting and shed some interesting light onto the role of technology in our teaching. So here's our first panelist, Patricia Armstrong.
I just want to preface my remarks by saying, as always, it's so great to be here and to see so many people from a variety of disciplines and ranks within the university. I think that the series last year and this year, both of them have really brought together people who wouldn't necessarily be together in the same room, and that's one of the things that I love about being here. But it's the first time I'm a panelist. I'm normally in Susan's role, so this is a little bit of a change for me. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to recount why and how I've incorporated various technologies into my teaching, results both from my perspective as a professor and also from students of their perspectives on this incorporation, and conclusions that I've drawn from incorporating technology into my classroom and responses to this incorporation. And I'm going to bookend my remarks with two anecdotes. So the first anecdote is from fall 2005, when I was teaching French 201, which is considered in the department a pretty difficult and demanding course to teach because it has two goals that don't really overlap that much. One of them is to really solidify in our students who are entering the major real grasp of the nuances of French grammar, and the second is to introduce them to the conventions of writing in French. And there is some overlap. You have to be able to use grammatical structures in order to write effectively, but there's not a lot of overlap. And so you really feel like, I have discovered in teaching that course that I feel very pressed for time. And so I made the decision in fall 2005 that I would, in a very minimal way, incorporate a very basic technology into the classroom, and that's PowerPoint. And for a very particular reason. I find that when I'm teaching grammatical concepts, it's very helpful to show students examples of sentences and phrases with those concepts and those structures in action, in practice. And I felt like I was wasting a lot of time in class coming up with those examples, writing them on the board, making sure that I had written everything correctly. And so I thought it would be so much more efficient for me to create examples ahead of time and simply just to project them at the appropriate time in my explanation of a grammatical concept. I also thought that I would probably do a better job of coming up with better sentences if I were doing it in advance of the class and not on the cuff. So after about 4 to 5 weeks of doing this, I did a midterm evaluation with my students, which I always do, and I actually do it about twice, so about 4 to 5 week mark and about the 9 to 10 week mark. And I asked them just to comment on aspects of the class that were helping them to learn and things they would suggest changing. And it was pretty clear from the suggestions for change that I should cut out using PowerPoint to teach grammar. And I'm going to give you the first quote, citation from this set of evaluations, which is PowerPoint really the best way to teach grammar? And to which I didn't even have to respond because a second student's comment to my perspective served as a response. Quote, I think she should just teach. And so my interpretation of those two responses that were borne out by other student responses is that I couldn't just teach from their perspective when I was trying to use this technology, and from their point of view, not in a particularly effective way. So my analysis of that, and I stopped doing it, by the way. My analysis of why it didn't work for students is that it wasn't just the right move for me. I tend to be very dynamic in the classroom. I tend to have a lot of interaction with my students, and I actually think that my moving to and from the board to actually write sentences on the board was very dynamic. I could also create sentences that riffed on things that students had just said, or we could kind of develop a theme for the day. And so I think that they really missed, without knowing it, the Patricia who's very dynamic and very spontaneous and very reactive to students. So I still believe that I did it for the right reason, just not with the results I would have liked. So that did not dissuade me from the next time I taught. I did not teach in fall 2006. And as a parenthesis, we in the Center for Teaching teach one course a year generally. So this long break between teaching is normal for us. So last time I taught was last semester, fall 2007, still in the French department, and this time an upper-level seminar into 17th century French literature, which is my field of specialty. And of course I used Blackboard. I just want to say that it goes without saying that I used Blackboard as a very convenient way of gathering course materials, disseminating assignments, just for very basic course management purposes. I also, on Oak, posted images of Louis XIV. The title of this course was The Age of Louis XIV. And as I found images that I wanted to discuss in class, I would post them there so students could look at them before class. And additionally, I decided to incorporate 17th century wall calendars into my class this past fall. And these wall calendars clearly cannot be taken from the archives to the United States. And so what I had done in summer 2007 had gone and selected about 10 images and paid for digital reproductions of them and then posted them on our course website. And of course that was so much more effective than had I made photocopies for students because we were able to zoom in on particular details. There's very, very tiny writing when it's that small that they were able to then blow up and then they could make sure that they understood it, they could check in with me. So, I found that was very effective and actually used those almanacs in an assignment. Another way that I used something, or that students used it to great effect, was that we read probably 2 to 3 dozen fables by La Fontaine. And a couple of years ago, I had just happened upon, somebody sent me an email, not just me, but other people, saying that there was a website where every single fable by La Fontaine is available recited out loud. And so I let my students know about this website and recommended that they consult it while they were reading the fables that I had assigned for class. And many of them reported that hearing the fable in addition to reading it really helped their comprehension. This is extraordinarily difficult French. It's poetic, it has archaic constructions. La Fontaine works pretty hard to be very obscurant in places, and for very political reasons. And so hearing these fables by a Francophone speaker was really crucial for some of them to actually get the meaning. The other thing that I would point out that I thought was very successful is that I assigned Tartuffe and discovered that there in the Vanderbilt Library and even via Amazon.com, there weren't particularly good versions to show my students. And the best version I knew of was actually a student production of the opera based on the play that was presented last February. So I contacted the faculty member who had directed the production, asked for permission to upload, I didn't do the uploading, but to have that the film, the DVD of it uploaded so that my students could then watch it for an assignment. And it was a choice that only two out of 15 chose, because I gave them lots of choices for their final paper. But the two students who did choose to do a review of that particular production did an extraordinary job, and such a good job that I'm definitely going to keep it as that assignment as a possibility for future assignments, but some of the other ones that weren't as successful, I won't. And I was able to do that. I couldn't transport them back in time to February 2007 to see this production, but I could have them watch it via this uploaded, digitized version. So nobody really commented on the uses of these technologies in my evaluations, although several people talked about how they liked different media. And when I scratched the surface of that, different media also included the fact that we read poetry, we read a play, we read prose, we watched a film, and these other things that I used. But I can say that I received, for the first time in my life, with a very old technology, I received handwritten thank you notes from two students in the class. And in these handwritten thank you notes, both of them commented on the level of engagement they felt in the course, and in particular how engaging they found me. And so I think what I've taken from my experience of using technology in the classroom is that as long as it enables me to remain engaged and engage with my students and engaging to them and allows them to be engaged with the material, I'm going to continue to try. But as soon as I get any indication from them that it's not serving that function, I'm not going to use a particular technology. And I still think that we're at a point where we're not obliged to do it, that students still know how to learn without it. And I don't know what the future holds. So the second anecdote that's going to end my remarks actually comes from last night at about 8:45 p.m., so very recent, during which I was doing a small group analysis, which is something that the Center for Teaching does at the request of faculty members and TAs to come in and gather feedback from students about the class. So this particular professor in a very reading-intensive field had wondered about students' engagement with the reading. And this is a graduate class, by the way. I should probably say that. And so the very last question, which is, what could be changed in this class to increase your engagement with the reading? One student said out loud, get rid of electronic assignments. As a matter of fact, just get rid of all the electronic aspects of this course. And so I looked around and I said, is this something that the rest of you share? And everyone said yes, and one person said, it actually doesn't help us to build a community of discussion around the material. And so from this student's perspective, the goal of the course was to develop a community of discussion, and from all the students' perspective, the way that technology was being used in this particular class was not leading to that. So their comments confirm a conclusion that I have drawn from my own experience, is that when it gets in the way of engagement or learning, cut it out, but use it to the extent that it does facilitate those things.
Is it my turn?
It is.
You wanted me to go right there?
Yes.
It's really, I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today, and I've got to say that Vanderbilt students are fantastic. It really is. And I can't remember who we were having a discussion with. Might have been Jay and I at lunch yesterday. Is there a time where just the students themselves, because of the quality of students, come into this institution that they would naturally learn on their own without our aid as we go through the process? They're really an amazing group of students. I think you'll find my remarks are fairly congruous with Patricia's. And in the interest of full disclosure, two things. This is, because of my role, you might think I'm purely a technophile and I'm going to advocate for the saturation of technology at Vanderbilt. That's probably the farthest thing from the truth. One of the things that we went into the course that Jay and I developed as a brand new course and concept was that the technology should neither overshadow nor interfere with the learning, that everything it should be would be enhancement, augmentation, and aiding in the instruction. So it's hard to do. And the class that Jay and I constructed, I'm going to just enumerate some of the technologies that we used in the course of instruction and tell you a little bit about the course I'm teaching this semester. The other caveat is that I'm participating. I think I'm the tag. I've got an ear tag on right now from the Center for Teaching because I'm going through the teaching certificate program with Patricia and her colleagues, and they've been instrumental in helping me sort of structure my thinking and reflections on our experiences together. It's been a very good and beneficial process to me personally. With those two things said, you know, we had a few learning objectives, which I want to comment on, and Professor Clayton will go into more detail about those. But it's a freshman seminar, so the Worlds of Wordcraft was a freshman writing seminar. And the title and the hype around it sometimes gets lost, but that was one of our primary objectives. And the course was to improve the students' writing capability. And we also wanted to equip the students with a vocabulary that allowed them to be critical as it relates to their thinking when they observed a movie or read a book or had an interactive gaming experience. And Jay's going to talk through some of the media that we used to achieve that result. And then the other objective was to take a classic work, Spencer's The Faery Queen, and then port that over into a 3D game space through a student design process where the students led the design, constructed the actual rules of the universe and people, then populated it with narrative that is purely derived from Spencer's work. And those are, I think, the three overarching objectives of the course. Now, how do we apply technology? I mean, technology was at the core of this, and I'm going to have to give you the laundry list so that we understand the depth and breadth of what we were doing in there. One is, I want to say this, though, too. Chalkboards and chalk are technologies. Don't lose sight of that. We think technology, it's digital. So as Patricia said, you may need to get up and interact with a chalkboard. It's still a technology. Everything's about electrified technology today. So one of the things that are taken for granted, almost to the point of chalkboard taken for granted, is wireless access within the classroom, video projectors, DVDs, DVRs. I mean, not DVRs at this point, but VCRs at this point. I think those are kind of almost a given that there will be some sort of audio-visual stack where you can death by PowerPoint your students. And that capability exists. We started introducing the use of a smart board into the classroom experience, which is an interactive chalkboard. It allows you to go up, write your lectures on the board, extend the board, so you can have 800 pages of lecture notes captured and then saved. So we were using the smart board extensively. We had a document imager in the classroom where we could take Lord of the Rings, one of the books from the Lord of the Rings, for example, or Neal Stephenson, place it on the viewer, project it over to our audiovisual stack, but there's a little bit more to it. We can have that document imager interfacing in with our smart board to actually annotate, capture, modify, and juxtapose multiple images from the internet, from the book, while the students interacted with that, and then save that interaction as a result, and then make it available for future dissemination. So that was an amazing experience there. Facebook we created a Facebook group, and that really helped us maintain contact with the students. I mean, you know, OAK is a very useful tool for administrative purposes, but Facebook we found is that's really the type of place where they live. If we want to interact with them, we don't use email, we don't use OAK, we use Facebook. And we got a great response. We can tell you about some events that we set up, some parties that we set up, homework assignments. It was very effective to create the Worlds of Wordcraft group in Facebook and then interact with our students in that space. YouTube. We used YouTube a lot. We were one of the first videos out there on YouTube University with our public affairs colleagues. We not only used YouTube in terms of our publishing, but we used it in the context of we took material from YouTube and integrated it into the classroom experience. We also, in a controversial way, I think Jay will talk about, we used Wikipedia. And that was all voluntary at first, but Dale has some anecdote to share around Wikipedia. It's a very useful application in the classroom It provoked a lot of interesting debate, and it really gave them ready access to a lot of the things that we were discussing. You know, the thing about Wikipedia is that we're talking a lot about it in my course this semester. It's called Web 2.0, Beyond the One-Way Web. And the topic this week and the last 2 weeks in the course has been about disruption to traditional modes of thinking, whether it's getting a reference material. We did a comparison between Britannica and Wikipedia in terms of the quality of the entries. It's a great Nature article that discusses basic scientific entries that compares quality. We talked about how print and broadcasting are being disrupted by blogs. So this is the thing we're discussing topically in an engineering course, a computer science course, right now. And it's been very beneficial for them to reflect upon how the blogs, which Professor Clayton and I use blogs in the context of the learning experience, which had some great learning benefit, is that it really did help increase the volume of writing in our seminars, and it helped them understand that, wait a second, and Jay will go through some of the statistics with you, you're writing for a mass audience. You have to be very circumspect when you're writing for a mass audience in ways that you weren't before. And so, and that created a very safe environment for them to move their writing volume forward. We utilized Google Documents in this class as well for asynchronous and synchronous collaboration and peer review. Part of the requirements that Professor Clayton put down were to have peer-reviewed essays. There were our blogs to keep the writing volume moving at a weekly basis, and then there were substantial major essays that were facilitated through Google Documents. We have some varied and mixed experience on each of those that we'll share with you. Microsoft Live Spaces was a very big part of this discussion because they give away a free gigabyte of storage. And what we were able to do is take classroom notes, for example, place the notes from every class or links that we discussed in class or books that we read in class and put it together on a live space so they had a ready reference of class supplemental materials immediately after the class, because the key thing to our classroom is that laptops are always on in this seminar. Now, not everything's amenable to that, but our experience was laptops are always on, so they were always interacting and we were always updating live. So we were kind of creating new knowledge and new knowledge structures during the course of the class. Microsoft Live Spaces was a great repository. And the reason why we're using free tools, we used WordPress, Microsoft Live Spaces, and Google Documents, is that we wanted to create a model that was easily replicated. Provisioning for these tools were very simple, and that any community college in the United States could benefit from the use and application of these tools in the way that we wanted to sort of set an example for it. Audio lecture capture and public dissemination, we had a tremendous amount of different and varied tools. For the actual dissemination piece, we used YouTube and iTunes University in conjunction with our public affairs folks. So every course lecture was captured, edited, massaged, and then placed into iTunes University. Neverwinter Nights, Lord of the Rings Online, that just really gets you started on the depth and breadth of the technologies that we used. What I want to caution everybody about is, and in my reflections for the Center of Teaching, which I'm sort of referencing here, there's different phases to it. Phase one was to reflect on some of the first kind of classroom experiences that I had. I went and assessed the efficacy from my perspective of each one. And overall, it's very effective. We did a similar survey, although we had them in October write a blog entry. What's your perception of the technology and the classroom? And on a ratio of 13 to 2, it was very positive. And this may be a self-selecting group of people who have a selection bias towards liking technology, be one argument. But what we found coming into the course, and this is something for everyone to think about, all the educause you read, all the mass media and Newsweek, Time, and whatever, they think that this digital generation and digital natives, and I helped to discuss that, a lot of that's true. They grew up with the mouse in their hand, but they don't have the level of facility that everyone thinks with the technology. There is a great learning curve. There are many administrative, support, and technical hurdles that you will need to overcome in using these tools in the context of your classroom. So our, I guess, advice and counsel to be, use them judiciously. Make sure that you have some degree of facility with the tools before you choose to introduce them to the classroom. Because if you need it to teach your course, the moment that you need it to teach your course, I can guarantee you it will not be there for you when you need it. This is the technology guy telling you that. So we believe in high availability, but the fact of the matter is, it's there. And matter of fact, iChange University, YouTube, Microsoft, what they giveth, they may one day taketh away from us. And it may not be as free it is as it is right now. So be thoughtful in your application of this. Apply the right tool to the right job. Many of them have differing and varying uses, and we can talk to the fact that it does require a great amount of administrative effort, support effort, and this is not, these digital natives don't have a native understanding of the way all these technologies work. I mean, some of these students were truly overwhelmed by what we were doing. And we got through it in an amazing way, and at the end of the semester, before I turn it over to Jay here, I want to make this very clear. We had two students unsolicited come back and make blog entries as to the effectiveness of the course without any solicitation. They were very pleased. They had a wonderful time. You know, the funny thing is, and I don't know if this is a generalization here that may be in, you know, kind of inappropriate aggregately, but it's my personal experience. Arts and sciences students were very interactive, very engaged in this Web 2.0 world. Right, they were talking, they were chatting, they were engaged with us. When I got to the engineering school this semester and started working with the engineering students, I think I had like four drops after the first or second class because I said, this isn't going to be education 1.0, it's 2.0 and you're going to participate. And Doug Schmidt, who's working with me on this, said, no. You stand up there and give them the information. I said, okay, you know, I'm adaptive. I'll do that. But they warmed up now. They are much the students that have stayed with me are warming up to it. But wow, what a difference between the two students that we have, our freshmen and these junior, seniors, and grad students. Professor Clayton.
Great. Thank you. Matt's talked about the technological infrastructure that we used in this class. I want to talk about how the content of the class was affected by the technology. When I began thinking about our discussion today, the first thing that came into my mind was how much fun I had teaching that class. I had remarked to someone that it was the most fun I'd had teaching in 20 years, and then I realized, no, it was the most fun I ever had in a classroom. And I think that the pleasure that I was taking in the class has a relation to the pedagogical outcome of the class. First of all, I was experiencing the pleasure of discovery. I was not just discovering about how these technologies could work, because Matt and I were out on the edge. I mean, he has barely scratched the surface of the number of different technologies we were using simultaneously in this class. And so we were experimenting, we were testing which ones would work and which have drawbacks, and you know, we plan to write up things that will discuss which ones are more effective than others. But it was the pleasure of discovering new things about literature that I had never seen before because of the way we were teaching it. And you know, you always talk about the pleasure of learning from your students. This is one of the first times I ever understood that in a really deep way, that I was learning from the experience of teaching these students. It was the most participatory class I've ever been in my entire life in three different institutions. The students were the most active, and they were participating in the creation of knowledge, the dissemination of knowledge, and the learning of knowledge in all kinds of ways, not just verbally, though the dialogue in the class was as active as I've ever seen a first-year seminar at Vanderbilt, but also visually. There was a great moment when we were trying to define a complicated literary term called remediation, which is to take something in one medium and put it into another medium. And the students were kind of rolling their eyes and saying, what does that mean? And at the height of discontent, the moment of, maybe I should say, at the nadir of discontent, a student raised his hand and said, may I have control of one of the projectors? We had, and we said, sure. And he goes click, 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 and his laptop, which he's had open to a wireless, seizes control of the LCD projector onto the screen, and boom, he plays a YouTube video by a by someone in Australia explaining what the term remediation means.
Wonderful.
And, I mean, it just blew them away. I mean, they couldn't believe that somebody on YouTube would be taking seriously a term like remediation. So, you know, it was just like case closed. I could shut my book. I didn't have to prove to them anymore that that was a real word that people would care about. But I was also really worried going into this class about the non-canonical nature of the material we were teaching. All I could think of is what the parents of these first-year students were saying when they learned we were teaching their little children video games. They had spent their entire high school years trying to keep their children from playing video games, and they're paying Vanderbilt tuition to have us teach them about it. So I was, you know, desperate to come up with a rationale for how they'd actually learn something from this class. So I was always paying attention to what they might be able to learn from this course. And there was a special challenge involved because we surveyed the 15 students, and not one of them was planning to be an English major. Furthermore, not one of them was planning to be a humanities major. So how was I going to teach about literature to these 15 non-believers? Well, you know, pedagogy theorists, composition theorists have long talked about the advantages of using technology in terms of writing instruction. And so I don't even want to go over that. I mean, it's the literature's out there. People that know it better than I do, like Mark Wallager, my colleague here at Vanderbilt, can do an entire seminar on how pre-writing, peer review, establishing a sense of audience, revision process, all of those things are more effectively done using digital technologies. So, you know, I was pretty confident that if nothing else worked in this class, at least we would be improving their writing. And we did. I mean, you're required to have 3 formal essays in a 115F class. We had 3 formal essays, which we peer-reviewed and which we had conferences on in my office and required revisions and then resubmission, all the regular steps that you're familiar with from 115Fs. But in addition, we required them to write 10 blog entries graded over the course of the semester. So they were doing essentially, not quite weekly, actually it was weekly because we didn't start the blog up until about 3 weeks into the class. So, and that was less formal writing, but it was still writing for an audience. The first month of this freshman-authored blog, the first month, it had over 2,000 hits from people around the world. And that sure gives you a sense that you're writing for an audience. You know, most freshmen, you say you've got to learn who your audience is, you've got to teach. But it's all abstraction to them. They don't believe you. You know, they think you're the audience and that this is just something they have to get done with. But much more important was the literature content to me. And what I think we were enabled to teach in this class was new ways to think about narrative. The first thing we did was we made the point that all the online games that they're familiar with are sword and sorcery games that are derived directly from the era of Chaucer, of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, and ultimately to Spencer. And so that was fairly effective. But much more interesting to me was the way that I could teach the fundamental building blocks of narrative theory to students via the technology in the classroom. Simple concepts that, in fact, you don't want to get much more difficult with non-humanities majors than these concepts I'm about to name. Simple concepts like point of view, character, space, and time came alive via the technology because we would talk about how an author would handle point of view and how a filmmaker would handle point of view and then what it was like to be inside a virtual reality world where you were the center of the point of view. And we could teach it quite vividly because we would put up on the smart board, via the document imager on the smart board, the textual scene, and read it together and have students standing up at the board annotating with markers the actual text with the students' comments on the text, which then we would save, capture, and publish to the web. Then we showed the same scene, the scene from Tolkien that we had just read. We showed the film version from Peter Jackson's movie on another board, keeping, you know, we had three smart boards in this room. We were pretty, we were pumped. We were ready for action. So we had the Tolkien passage in print right there on one wall. We had the movie going on another wall. And then we had all 17 of us, the two teachers and the 15 students, enter the game at the scene that they had just read and seen and play it when they're the center of consciousness. And so think about how setting is handled differently in print, in film, and in a game. Think about what it means that you can turn 360 degrees and look around. I've barely scratched the surface, but I think I got to jump ahead and say that all of these narrative theory terms that we explored in this class came together when we had the students construct their own virtual reality world. They built, using Neverwinter Nights' platform, their own video game that's now out on the web. You could go play it right now, for as soon as we get through, rush to your computer and you can play Spencer's Fairy Queen. And they built it. And we're going to be able to use that virtual world next year when we teach it and have more students contribute to it. So it's collaborative. It's a collaborative virtual world through time as well as in this year's group. But all the questions of what spatial dimensions, how does that affect narrative, came of use when they had to create a map of the world of Spencer's Fairy Queen. Now, Spencer's Fairy Queen is one of the most difficult works of a college student will ever encounter. It's notorious as being a hard sell to undergraduates. That's why we chose it. We thought if we could make these students enjoy Spencer, if we could make Matt Hall learn to like Spencer, could do anything. The students were going back. They were quoting passages from it. They had a textual engagement that, you know, frankly, I thought was impossible to achieve with an undergraduate audience. But I'll stop with this conclusion. We discovered through our research that there had never been an accurate map of Spencer's Fairy Queen published ever. And because the cues are so uncertain, scholars have tried like crazy to find original places in England that would map onto the action. And there's some correspondences, but there's a lot of contradictions. So there is no such thing as the fairy world until today. And the students mapped the action of the Fairy Queen.
On the smart board.
On the smart board, and then they built it.
You've just heard audio recorded at a February 2008 lunch discussion on the subject of teaching in a digital age. Speakers at that discussion were Patricia Armstrong, Assistant Director at the Center for Teaching and Senior Lecturer in the Department of French and Italian, then Matt Hall, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Information Technology Services, and finally Jay Clayton, William R. Keenan Jr. Professor and Chair in the Department of English. If you visit our blog, located at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast, you'll find a link to the blog that Jay and Matt and their students created during their fall 2007 Worlds of Wordcraft first-year writing seminar. By visiting their course blog, you'll get a real sense of the teaching and learning that occurred during that course. In our blog, you'll also find a link to their course podcast, allowing you to actually see and hear what happened during their class sessions. You'll also find a link to a story about their course that appeared in the Vanderbilt View campus print publication last fall. One of the really interesting things about the use of technology that Jay and Matt implemented in their course is that it makes visible the teaching and learning that goes on in that course. So I encourage you to take advantage of some of these links to find out more about their course and how they taught it. You'll also find on our blog a place to leave comments on this episode. Please take a minute or two to leave a comment and share your thoughts on teaching with technology. We're interested in hearing what you have to say about the subject. Vanderbilt instructors interested in discussing teaching in a digital age or any other aspect of their teaching are invited to call the Center for Teaching at 615-322-7290 to arrange a meeting with a Center for Teaching teaching consultant. We'd be glad to talk with you about any aspect of your teaching, help you think through the teaching choices that you might make, help you connect with campus resources that can help you implement perhaps some of the ideas that were described in today's episode. I would like to thank Patricia Armstrong, Matt Hall, and Jay Clayton for sharing their thoughts on teaching with technology during our discussion in February, but also in this podcast episode. I've been your host, Derek Bruff. Please join us for future episodes by visiting our blog, blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast. Thanks for listening.